We're holding on the top line of Lamed Amud Aleph. We discussed yesterday the various mitzvahs, the various things that a father has to do for his son to make sure he has bris milah, pidyon haben, etc. One of them, we started talking about the whole concept that the father has a responsibility to teach his son Torah. And then that brought us into a related discussion, which is at what age should a person get married, because that bears on that, whether a person should be getting married first and learn Torah afterwards, but then the problem is he's going to have the burden of panasa, or the other way around, but then he'll have Yehurim, which we discussed back before.
If you can't say 18 enough.
18, right. Hello. Right, so our Gemara had said that really you're supposed to do it by 20. So now we're holding the top of Lamed Amud Aleph. Amalei Rava L'Rav Nosson Ba'ami, Rava says to Rav Nosson Ba'ami, Adi yodach al savre debrech, while your hand is on your son's neck, meaning that while you still have your son under your control, before he gets too old to be able to accept, to be able to rashi give two explanations, what we're talking about, whether we're talking about that this is the age to give him musar, to give him techacha, like kabel techachacha, Rashi says. So what Rashi's first explanation is, we're talking about what ages it's appropriate to get him married at. Not too young and not too old where he won't listen to you anymore. And the other explanation Rashi says is we're talking about be careful lelamdo techacha, to teach him musar, to teach him the right way, the right way to act. Below a certain age, he won't really be able to absorb it yet. Above a certain age, he's just gonna rebel against you anyway. Those are mishitza vad etzim v'tarki, between the ages of 16 and 22. Another version is that it's from 18 to 24. So again, below 16 or 18, as the case may be, either according to Rashi's first explanation, it's too young for him to be getting married, for most people, or it's too young for him to be able to, you give him musar, you try to teach him the right thing, he's not really going to be able to absorb it. And above 22 or 24, as the case may be, he's going to be too old, it's already too old, he should have been married by that time, or you should have already been giving him teuchacha by then, because at that point already he's going to be rebelling. Katanoi, the Gemara says, this is actually, like this that we're saying, 16 to 22 or 18 to 24, is actually machalot tanoi. The pasuk says, chanoicha na'ar apidarkei, educate the child according to his way, meaning Rashi explains, educate him in a way that you'll educate him when he's young and then he'll stick to it when he's much older. What's a na'ar for that purpose? What's his youth? Rabbi Yehuda of Rabbi Nechemia. Okay, so Rashi explains it means that give him a chinuch, lamar, when he's a youth, al pidarkei, that he will remain in this derech for the rest of his life. So there's an appropriate age for that. The Marashah explains differently. That chinuch lamar al pidarkei means every child needs a chinuch in a different way, meaning you have to look at the child's abilities and see whether he's more suited to it at 16 or at 18 or at 22 or at 24. Anyway, so for those ages, Rabbi Yehuda ben Nechemia, Chadam Meshitza Vadesim Vatarkin, one says from 16 to 22, Chadam Mitranitze Vadesim Rabba, the other says from 18 to 24. Exactly the same two different versions that we had in what Rava said. Then Yoyada, by the way, says a cute verse on it. Why are we calling it Adi Yoda Chatzavre Debrech when your hand is on your son's neck? He says because a boy that age has not fully grown yet. He hasn't grown to his full adult height. His neck is about the height of your hand. So therefore, I'd literally, I'll be yodach, I'll sabre the breath. Your hand is literally at the same height as his neck.
Before that he's too young,
and after that he's too old. Yeah. Okay. Next. The Ben Yoyada says that. Up to what point is a person obligated to teach his son Torah? Now, we could understand in two different ways. It could mean how many generations. Does it mean only his son, or does it mean future generations? Or does it mean how much do you need to teach him? That's what we're going to be discussing. Amar Rabbi Yehuda HaMashmuk, we're going to Zvulun Ben Don. For example, the case of Zvulun Ben Don, Rashi says it was a Talmud who lived in their days, so they used him as an example. This is, by the way, as far as I know, the only person in all of Shas named Zvulun, and the only person in all of Shas named Don, except for the original Shvatim, of course. Shalimde Avi Aviv, his grandfather, his father's father, taught him Mikra. Mikra can mean either Chumash or all of Tanakh. We'll discuss soon about the pros and cons of that. Anyway, Mikra, Mishnah, the Talmud, Halachas Vagadus. Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara, Halacha, and Agata. Okay, Maitre, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braita says, Limde Mikra, Ein Malamde Mishnah. Braita says that if a father taught his son Mikra, meaning Tanakh, or maybe even just Chumash, he's not obligated to teach him Mishnah. Amar Rava Mikra Zu Torah. And actually, Rava says that Mikra for this purpose means only Torah. Rashi says not even Nach. Torah Shmuchsach. Not even Nach. The Rambam learns differently. The Rambam understands that Torah, that when Rava says Mikra Zu Torah, he means all Tanakh. The Alter Rebbe passed them that way also. Their father has an obligation to teach his son all Tanakh. Yeah. The fact that we don't do that nowadays is a whole other issue. But anyway, a number of Rishonim and Achronim have decried that state of affairs, that Nach is not learned very commonly. There's reasons behind it. I mean, there's Gemara and Brachas, for example, that says that maybe learning Nach is not such as not in and of itself but a good thing, because you may get too involved in math and then ignore the other parts of Torah. Anyway, whatever. Not really a stira. I mean, it depends on the circumstances. You know, you maybe don't teach it to them at such a young age when they'll get too involved with it to the exclusion of Mishnah and Gemara, but on the other hand, a person does have to be familiar with it at some point. Anyway, so you see from that you only have an obligation to teach your son Chumash or Tanakh, as the case may be, not Teresh Vapeh, like Zvulun Ben Don's grandfather did. So there is a lot of discussion about that. First of all, there are Mefarshim who say that the Gemara is you have to realize there's two different chiyuvim. We're in the middle of dealing with the chiyuv that a father has to teach his son Torah, or Vishinantam Lavanecha, whatever. That's one. Number two, there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So mitzvah, not a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, there's a mitzvah of chinuch, rather. There's a mitzvah of chinuch that you have to teach your child the right thing to do, the halachas, what to do and what not to do. Mitzvah Talmud Torah, that would be what the Gemara is saying, that all you have is an obligation to teach him Chumash or Tanakh, as the case may be. Mitzvah chinuch. No, because you have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you have a mitzvah of limatim oitzmas b'neichem. That is Chumash or Tanakh, as the case may be. Then on top of that, you have a mitzvah of chinuch, where he has to know what to do and what not to do, and for that he needs to learn Mishnah and Gemara and so forth.
You just said the Alter Rebbe includes everything.
The Alter Rebbe includes Tanakh in Torah. The Rambam and the Alter Rebbe include Tanakh, not Torah. So the Gemara is saying over here that Torah Shabbat is not included. So the answer is Kizvulun. Oh, there's other explanations also. Actually, the Nitziv has an interesting explanation. He says maybe what it means is if the father himself teaches the child Tanakh, or Chumash, as the case may be, then he's not obligated to teach him Mishnah. But if he anyway didn't teach him Chumash, if he left it up to the Malamdim, then by rights he should be teaching him Mishnah. And if he didn't teach him Mishnah, if he left that up to the Malamdim also, then he should be teaching him Gemara, and so forth. That's his part on it. But also, the Nitziv says that. There's also, they talk about, maybe the Gemara is talking about over here what you have to do for free versus what you're obligated to get Malamdim for. We learned back in the Dorim that technically, Torah Shabbat Peh is supposed to be taught for free anyway. So maybe what the Gemara is saying over here is you don't have an obligation to have him taught Torah Shabbat Peh if it's going to cost you money. But if it's going to be for free, if you're going to teach him yourself, then sure, you should be. Yeah. Anyway, the Gemara says, Kizvulun ben dun v'leitizvulun ben dun. Okay, what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel meant is, in a way, we're learning from the case of Zvulun ben dun, but in a way not. We're saying in a certain way we have to learn from his example, in a certain way not. Zvulun ben Don Shalim de Aviyah's name, and we have to do like Zvulun ben Don, where you see it wasn't his father who told him, it was his grandfather. So we see from that when we say Ad Heichon, how far does the chiyuv extend? It means in generations. It's not just your own son; you have an obligation to teach your grandchildren as well.
If your son doesn't want you to teach,
he has to learn somehow. If the son's not going to teach him, then you have an obligation to. That's what we're saying. But also, before we should talk about, maybe we don't just mean a grandson. Maybe we mean also a great-grandson, a great-great, however far it goes. Yeah. The loik is Zvulun ben Don. But on the other hand, you don't have to do like Zvulun ben Don's grandfather. The Yilohacha Mikra Mishnah of a Talmud Halachas Vagodas, because he taught him all of that. The Yilohacha Mikra Levad, but when it comes to a father or a grandfather teaching, technically all he has to do is Mikra. The Gemara says, Avi Ovid Mimachayev, the Yilohacha Mikra Levad, yeah. The Gemara asks, Avi Ovid Mimachayev, you're telling me that a grandfather is obligated to teach his grandson Torah? But we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, V'limadkem oisim as b'neichem, you should teach your children, meaning v'loy b'nei b'neichem, meaning as opposed to your grandchildren. U'mani m'kayim v'haydaitim l'v'necha v'l'v'nei v'necha. So what do we do with the Pasuk, we say it in Sheish Tzidus, that you should make it known to your children and to your children's children? That's not to teach you, the Gemara is going to say. That's not to teach you that you have to teach your grandchildren. Rather, loy malach, it comes to teach you, kol ha-malamed es b'noi Torah, that when somebody teaches his son Torah, or there's a gerus over here, ben b'noi, that when he teaches his son or his grandson Torah, malol ha-kosek kilelim de loyul of noyul ben b'nei atzei fa'adernis. Then the pasuk considers it as if he taught his son and his grandson and his great-grandson, etc., to all generations. And when you teach your son, and he learns the right thing, and eventually he'll teach it to his children, you're making it possible for Torah to be perpetuated in your family. So that's not to say that you have to teach your grandson, but if you teach your son or your grandson, as the case may be, then the Torah considers it, the Torah credits you with everything that happens generations after that. So you're telling me from Zvulun Ben Don's example that you see a grandfather teach his grandson, l'chora from that b'raisa that we see that not. The answer is
you have the schus if you do it,
but not that you're not you're actually obligated to do it. Yeah. Interesting vort I saw on it that what we're saying over here, if you teach the, according to the Girsa, that is if you teach your grandson, the vort is why? Because we know every generation that we're further away from Har Sinai, then you know the thing gets a little weaker, you know, it gets a little harder to transmit. So when you teach your grandchild, therefore, if you're skipping over where your child is getting one generation back closer to Har Sinai than he would have just from his father, then you get extra credit for that. Anyway, the answer is Hudama ki haitana. You're right, but so that's one b'raisa. But Shmuel, who's saying that you have an obligation to teach your grandson, is going according to a different tana from a different b'raisa. The tanya we learn in another b'raisa when it says v'limatamos mesmenechem does not mean only your children. Eimli el b'nechem, you would only know from that that it means literally your children. B'nei b'nechem inayin. How do we know that that pasuk also means you have to teach your grandchildren? That same pasuk that we just said that you have to inform your children and your children's children. In kain matam alayma b'nechem. So in that case, what would we do with the word b'nechem? It comes to include B'nechem v'lo b'nei seichem. You're not, as we talked yesterday, that you're not obligated to teach your daughters Torah. There are two different braises. One that says that b'nechem means as opposed to b'nei b'nechem, and therefore that you don't have an obligation to teach your grandchildren, and the other saying that it's to exclude your daughters, but you do have an obligation to your grandchildren. Again, there is the general thing. There is the general concept that Jewish people in general are responsible for making sure that all Jews know Torah. It's nothing else, it's a matter of Avos Yisrael. But we're talking about here about the obligation that a father has, or a grandfather as the case may be, more than anybody else. Yes, if the father or the grandfather or whatever is not teaching a person Torah, then everybody has a responsibility to be a shliach and go teach. Same as the question. The father has an extra chiyuv, that's what we're discussing over here. One difference is, again, it's a matter of free versus pay. It's a matter of free versus pay, for example, yeah? Omer Rabbi Shurban Levi. Kol HaMelamed Es Ben Bnei Torah. Actually, here, sorry, it wasn't before. Before when we said HaMelamed Es Bnei Torah, it definitely meant his son. Now it's over here where you have the different gear sides, whether it's Bnei or Ben Bnei. Okay. Omer Rabbi Shurban Levi. Kol HaMelamed Es Ben Bnei Torah. Anybody who teaches his grandson Torah, and here's again where you have the different gear sides, that maybe it's just supposed to be Bnei, his son. Mala, all of our cost of kibbutz kibbutz mehav sinai. Then Torah considers it in his credit as if he received it from Har Sinai. Shenema, v'ardaitem l'pnechav l'bnei v'necha. As the pasuk says, you should inform your children and your children's children about the Torah. The samachlei, and the next pasuk continues. Yerim Hashem amata l'pnei Hashem alakach b'chorev. The day that you stood before Hashem at Chorev, at Har Sinai. So we see that when you teach v'ardaitem l'pnechav to your child, l'bnei v'necha to your children's children, then it says if it was Yerim Hashem amata, it says it's the day you're standing in front of Har Sinai. And here's the vort that I was mentioning before, that when you teach your grandson, it's like you're getting him one generation closer to Har Sinai than he otherwise would from his parents, and therefore there's extra credit for that. Yeah. I'm going to tell a story in that connection. Rav Chiya ba'Aba Ashkechel Rav Yishur ben Levi. Rav Chiya ba'Aba one time met Rav Yishur ben Levi, the one who said this more just now. That the Shodi Disna Areshe, Rav Yishur ben Levi had just put like a scarf on his head. I mean, normally we learned yesterday that usually married men would wear a sudra, a turban, or something like that. In this case, Rabbi Shur ben Levi was in such a hurry that he didn't even want to walk around bareheaded, or as we said yesterday, maybe everybody wore a yarmulke, but he didn't want to walk around without an extra hat like people usually did. He didn't want to take the time to put on his turban properly, though. He just put like a schnatter or something on his head. And then he's bringing his child to the shul, which is where they have cheder in those days. Amalei, so Rav Chiya ba'Aba asked him, "My kolai, what's the rush? Why don't you put on your turban properly?" Amalei, and he answers him, "Mizut or Midas give. What is it? A small thing? This that it says in the pasuk, the drasha that we just had, by daitem l'vanecha, that you should teach your children as samachal yom hashem matel l'knei hashem l'kach b'chodim." And the next pasuk is talking about matan Torah, that we see the importance of teaching your child and bringing him to cheder, that's the equivalent of matan Torah. So I'm in such a hurry to do that. I want to make sure to get him there on time. That yes, I didn't take the time to put on my sudur. So the Gemara tells us, Mikan ve'elach, from then on, Rav Chiya Ba'av also followed this practice. And therefore, lo toim umza, well, to rush. Therefore, Rav Chiya Ba'av lo toim umza, he would not eat umza. Rashi explains that umza is meat that's roasted a little bit on the coal. They used to eat it for breakfast, or at least as maybe not a full breakfast, but whatever, it was part of what they would normally eat in the morning. There's other places in Chas where it seems that umza is more like pickled meat, like cold cuts, whatever it was something that they would normally eat. From then on, he would not taste this umza ad makri liyinuka umosve until he would first review with his son what he had learned yesterday, umosve, and teach him at least one more pasuk. In keeping with this thing, that it's as important as Matan Torah, so therefore he would do that first before he had his breakfast. The pasuk would daven first. I don't know. What's he doing eating before davening? Mustama, we would have to assume that this is all after davening. And Rabba Barapuna, lo toim umza ad maisi linukal bei medrasha, and similarly, Rabba Barapuna would not taste his morning umza until he brought his child to the bais medrash to school. Same idea. The Gemara mentions that in Barachas, yes, that women's chus in Talmud Torah is that they bring their children to school. Okay, I guess it probably depended on the circumstances. Maybe Rav Chiya Ba'avah's and Rav Baravona's wife, maybe not Rav Chiya Ba'avah, we say it's Rav Baravona. Maybe Rav Baravona's wife wasn't available to or whatever. Or maybe on the days when she wasn't available, then whatever. Yeah.
Did part of the,
what?
Bring your son's...
I mean, yes and no. I mean, nowadays we have buses, right? I mean, not necessarily. I mean, if you're able to, if you're able to walk your son to school and, have some quality time with him, adraba, but, Omer of Safra Mishomer of Bishrobat Hanania, my dichti vishinantam lo'anecha. What's it? The pasuk says, we say it every day. It says, vishinantam lo'anecha. You should teach it to your children. Al tuki vishinantam ela vishilashtam. Don't read the word vishinantam, but rather read it as if it said vishilashtam. Now, how do you get vishilashtam to vishinantam? So Rashi says the reason is, because if the pasuk just meant you should teach him to your children, instead of vishinantam with two nuns, it would have said ushnisem. Ushnisem, lashon shana, you should teach them to your children. Vishinantam implies something extra. So different mafoshim talk about how exactly we see a shalosh in there. Either there can be the idea that Vishinantam itself, the word Vishinantam itself already implies repeating. Vishinantam is a lashon sheni, so it already implies the second time. The extra nun adds the third time. Or another possibility is the previous pasuk is v'hayu advar ma'ela al lavavecha, so already that means learning at once. So then Vishinantam must mean, again, the two nuns means it must mean a second and a third time. So it must mean there's a three somewhere in there. Okay. I mean, you have to learn. As far as if it's talking about reviewing, you actually have to review many times. The Gemara is going to say over here that it's talking about how you should divide up your learning. They bring a vort also. They bring a vort also that you can get the word shalosh out of the word shonan, using a couple of different transformations. Nun and lamed come from the same moitzape. They're both dental letters. So therefore, nun and lamed can interchange. And one of the systems of exchanging letters is called atbach, where the letters that add up to a multiple of to a power of 10 go together, like aleph with tes, beis with ches, etc. So according to that system, langenun, which in some systems of gematria represents 700, can go together with shin, which is 300. So therefore, the nun can become a lamed by mozah peh, and the langenun of the shoda shonan can become a shin. Anyway. Yeah, well, wait. It means la'olam yishalash adam shnoi. So it means that a person should always. You have to remember that Rashi says on the pasuk of the vanecha actually means yitamidim. The actual pasuk to teach your children that's the liman tamosim es b'neichem from the second parasha of Shema. Here we're talking the first parasha. The vanecha elo atamidim, Rashi says over there. So la'olam yishalash adam
shnoi.
Fine, but the point is, in other words, that it's not necessarily talking about how you divide up your learning with your children. It's how you divide up your learning, which eventually you'll be in a position to teach. La'olam yishalash adam shnoi. So a person should always divide his years into three. Shlish v'mikra, one third of the time he should learn mikra, chumash or tanach, as the case may be. Shlish v'mishnah, shlish v'talmud. One third mishnah and one third talmud. The Rambam has some discussion, by the way, the Rambam and also the Al-Tadeva have some discussion what Mishnah and Talmud means in this connection. First of all, Rashi says over here that Talmud means the svara, the svara behind the basic halachas, why a certain Mishnah says something generically, and then we have to explain it, that it means only in a specific case, to understand why if one Mishnah contradicts another, how to reconcile it. That's Rashi's definition of Talmud. The Rambam's definition of it is more along the lines of you figure out where the halachas come from, with the Yud Gimel Midas Shachar and Reshus Behem, things of that nature. The Alter Rebbe goes into some detail of it also. The Alter Rebbe says, for example, that in our times, Mishnah includes things like the basic Shulchan Aruch, the actual halachas, the actual black letter halachas. Talmud, Gemara, whatever you want to call it, includes, for example, the Rishonim who discuss the actual application of the halacha, where it applies, where it doesn't. It also includes Kabbalah is also included in Talmud. Chassidus is blended out of all of them. We're going to say in a second, Tosfos mentioned that all Gemara itself, the Talmud Bavli, is blended out of all three of them, and Chassidus is the same way. It's blended out of Mikra and Mishnah and Talmud, in the sense of Kabbalah. Anyway, so one third. What? Wait. So on the face of it, it sounds like it means one third of your lifetime you should learn one, and then the next third. Question is, Miyad Kamachai? A person doesn't know how long they're going to live. And the answer is, let's Tzricha L'Yoymi. No, what this teaching means is that you should divide it according to the days. Rashi says that it means the days of the week. So Rashi says it means, in other words, 2 days a week learn Mikra, 2 days a week learn Mishnah, 2 days a week learn Talmud. Tosfos doesn't like that because you have the same problem. You have a kamachai. What if a person passes away in the middle of the week? So Tosfos answers that it means within every day itself, you should be learning one third of each. That's how the Rambam passes also. The Rambam gives an example.
During the day, part of the day.
What? Fine. It's less likely. You know, we're not so worried about Misa on the short term like that. But like this, for example, the Rambam gives an example. Let's say a person is working 3 hours a day and he has 9 hours a day available. Three should be Mikra, three Mishnah, three Talmud. At some point, yeah. Yeah, anybody's going to die at some point, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Now. To yourself and eventually to your children. Yeah, but you should teach your children to do this. Tosfos continues with this two things. First of all, you see that most people don't do that. But Tosfos' answer is, number one, we do it within davening itself. Every morning in davening, we have Mikra, we have the Pesukim about the Korbanos, we have Mishnah, the Perek Ezer Makorimon, and they doubt to pick that Perek because it has no Machlokas in it. And Talmud, again, according to the Rambam's definition of Talmud, which includes the Yud Gimel Midas, Shatzer and Resh, then, good, we do the Braith of Rebbe Shmuel, which is those Yud Gimel Midas. So therefore, we have all three every single day.
What about the other seeing you 8 hours a day or 9 hours?
Okay, so then they would learn a shorter amount. Wait, I'll tell you in a second what the Rambam says on this. But wait.
Talk about Tfilah here.
Okay, because we're focusing on the learning part of the day. Then again, the Rambam gives the example that if a person is working X amount of the day, then how much time they have left for learning? Then Tosfos mentions also the fact that our Gemara is blended out of all three of them. So when you learn Gemara, you're getting all three of them anyway. You're getting Mikra, you're getting Mishnah, and you're getting Talmud. The Rambam explains, and the Alter Rebbe follows suit, that all of this is talking about what a person is first starting out to learn. Eventually, a person reaches the point where they know Mikra, they know Mishnah. Then what they should be doing is you spend a little amount of time every day doing Mikra and Mishnah, so you don't forget them, but you focus most of your time on Talmud. Again, in the sense of delving into the deeper understanding of why is the halacha a certain way, where do we derive it from, that sort of thing. The Gemara continues, L'fichach nikru rishonim sofrim, it's because of the following thing that the earlier generations were called sofrim. Rashi says this is a whole new statement, this is a whole new thought. And so it says that it's actually a continuation. Why is it important to learn nikru? Because we see how careful they were with it. Anyway, the earlier generations were called Sofrim. Show you Sofrim called Otsias Shavat Torah, because they count all the letters in the Torah. Shohoyu Omrim, for example, they told us, Vav de Gochain Chetzit Shal Otsias, the letter Vav of the word Gochain from Parshas Shmini, called Holocha Gochain, is the middle of the letters of the Torah. Doresh Dorash Chetzit Shal Tevis, the word Doresh Dorash, also Parshas Shmini, are the middle words. They is Galach Shal Pesukim, the Pesuk is Galach from last week's Parsha, Parshas Hezriah, is the middle Pesuk. And you have to men a chazim miyar, ayin biyar chetzin shal tilim. In the pasuk in tilim, in capital pay, you have to men a chazim miyar. The ayin of yar is the midpoint of tilim. It's the middle of the psukim. So they had to know everything precisely in order to be able to give these details. No, but the point is that we see how careful they were to learn all the details. Maybe. I mean, every Sefer Torah is slightly different than every other. You have to be careful to keep the Masorah. You have to be careful that to be able to know, to be able to count, and then find, hey, the Sefer Torah is missing a letter, and let's correct it, or whatever. Why it is that Zavka, these things, the reams and reams of paper have been spent on the deeper meanings behind why each of these things is a midpoint of the Torah. There's also other reams of ink have been spilled on the whole question of the fact that if you count the letters in a Sefer Torah nowadays, you won't find the Vav of Gafayin being the middle letter, you won't find Darash Darash being the middle words, and so forth. So what's going on over here?
I mean,
you won't find, for example, the middle letter of the somebody counted, they found in a present day Sefer Torah, the middle letter is not the Vav of Gafayin, it's rather a Lamed someplace at the end of Parshas Tzav, I think, or something. The same thing with the middle words, same thing with the middle Pater. So why is that? So first, the Gemara is going to tell us in a few lines over here that we're not as expert on chaseiros v'yaseiros, the words that are supposed to be written with or without a vav or a yod or whatever. So there is that. But aside from that also, there's a lot of other explanations that have been given, including, for example, when the Gemara says over here the vav of Gachin is the middle letter, maybe it doesn't mean of all the letters in the Torah. Maybe it means out of all the extra large letters. We know that there's large letters in the Torah. The Beis of Bereshis, for example, the vav of Gachin is one of them. Out of all those large letters, the Vav of Gachin is the middle one out of all of those, not the middle letter of the whole Torah. Same thing with Doresh Dorash. Somebody counted and found that, yeah. Doresh Dorash, for example, if you count the number of times where the Torah says a word and repeats it, Avraham, Avraham, Moshe, Moshe, Yoim, Yoim, Shnayim, Shnayim, etc., then you can find Doresh Dorash is the middle pair of that of that kind. There's a lot of other possibilities I've seen. Also, I saw somebody who made a whole calculation that if you had a certain layout of a Sefer Torah, then you would find that, for example, the Vav Gachin would actually be in the middle of the middle of the would actually be in the middle of the middle column of such a Sefer Torah made in a certain layout, because afterwards, because then you also have to count the space for the Psuchos and Stumas and things of that nature.
Made in the same layout?
No. Nowadays, most Sefer Torah are made in the same layout, but they don't have to be. As long as you have the Psuchos and Stumas and the Shiris and whatnot where they have to, then a Sefer has a certain amount of latitude. So it's because of that, actually, that the halacha is nowadays, if you find a mistake in chaseiros v'yaseiros in the Sefer Torah that does not affect the pronunciation or the meaning, you don't actually take out another Sefer Torah for it. If you still have to correct it. If it's on Shabbos, you have to wait until after Shabbos. But you don't take out another Sefer Torah for a mistake in chaseiros v'yaseiros because, as our Gemara is going to say soon, we're not as expert in them anyway. Who is to say, if we took out another Sefer Torah, who's to say it would be any more accurate? This Vav of Gachin, we're saying that's the midpoint. Which side does it belong to? Evidently, Mephoshim say, Rav Yosef evidently knew that there's an even number of letters in the Sefer Torah, so it can't be there's one middle letter, it must be there's really two. So it's Vav, the Vav of Gachin, is it the last letter of the first half or the first letter of the second half? Amalei, Abaye says on the side, Abaye says to him, Nesi Sefer Torah v'nimninu. What's the problem? Let's bring a Sefer Torah and start counting. Mila Amar Rabba Baba Chana, don't we have a case where Rabba Baba Chana said, L'zozum yishamad shehiv Sefer Torah v'nom. They didn't move from there before they brought a Sefer Torah and counted them. Rashi says, by the way, I don't know where that story is. The Gemara in Shabbos that mentions that in connection with that they counted the number of words times in Malacha in the Torah, because it says about the Lama Tess Malachas, but they're also, the Gemara quotes it as if it's something from someplace else. So where that original place is, Rashi says, I don't know. Anyway. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef answered him, Inu b'kini b'chaseiros v'yaseiros. These early sofim were expert in which words are supposed to be chaser and which words are supposed to be malei. And then, like b'kini, we're not so expert in it.
Chaser and malei, it means...
Meaning, for example, like you have a word, sometimes it's spelled with a vav and sometimes without. Or some with a yod or without it. Exactly. So that's that, Rabbi Yosef is saying, we're not so expert on. The Alter Rebbe, by the way, has an explanation in Likutei Torah, but the Alter Rebbe actually is discussing a different issue. We know the famous thing, the 600,000 letters, Yesh Shishim Yerubayis of the Torah, but if you actually count, there's only a little over 300,000. Where are all the missing ones? There's many different explanations on that also. The Alter Rebbe gives one, which is, for example, every time there's a comma in principle, there should be written an aleph after it, because ka-mit has an aleph sound following it. Every time there's a cholim, it should be written with a yud, with a vav. Every time there's a chirik or a tzere, it should be written with a yud. Many of them are missing in the Torah, because they just didn't tell us, for example, to write, let's say, the word bereshis, there's no yud after the resh over there, but if you were to count all those quote-unquote missing letters, then you would have 600,000. So that could also be fitting with what the Gemara is saying over here. Maybe if you were to count like that, you would actually find that the Vav of Gochen is the actual middle letter. But Rabbi Yosef is saying we're not so expert in knowing al pi dikduk where they're supposed to be, where they're not supposed to be, and therefore we can't really say for sure.
We're saying from that that the order, the sequence of the letters has sort of changed with...
No, that's what we're saying. Well, we're saying as far as Chaseris Yisaris, on the face of it, yes. We're saying that, for example, in certain places, let's say you have the Aviseinu, some places it's spelled with the Vav after the Vav, some places not. Rav Yosef is saying we're not so expert in, I mean, we have a Masoda, we have, but the Masoda itself, though, that may have gotten scrambled in places where it's supposed to be Mole, where it's supposed to be Chaser. I mean, we'll clarify it, but yeah. Because that's the thing. He evidently assumed that there's an even number of letters. So if there's an even number of letters, either the end of the first number. He was, but that's neither here nor there. He still could have had by accounting. But Boyer of Yosef. Rabbi Yosef had another question. Vizgalach mehagiseh mehagiseh. What about Pasuk Vizgalach, which we're saying is the middle Pasuk of the Torah? Is that the end of the first half or the beginning of the second half? And here also, evidently, he's assuming, as the Gemara is going to tell us soon, that there's an even number of Pasukim in the Torah. Abaye tells him, what are you asking? What's at least the psukim we should be able to count. There's no reason to think that we don't know how many psukim there are in the Torah. The answer is no. The psukim nami lo b'kinin. Even as far as the division of psukim, we may not be so expert. Because we find that when Rav Acha ben Ada came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he reported, v'mar rova in the west, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, paskil l'haikro l'plos of psukim. They took the following pasuk, which we in Babel, and we nowadays also have as one long pasuk, and in Eretz Yisrael they split it into three psukim. V'yomer Hashem o'moshe hinei anechi bo'e l'acha ba'aba anam. The rest of the pasuk continues, v'avru yishma o'medabri imach l'gam b'chal yaminu l'olam, v'yaghed Moshe zivra amal Hashem. It's three different clauses in the pasuk. In Eretz Yisrael, they made down to three separate psukim. So you see that even as far as the number of psukim, we can't really be so expert on. Turn it up on. We learn it a bit. Chamesh esalof moshmoyne meyes eshmoyne moshmoyne psukim have a sefer Torah. Have a psukim sefer Torah. There are 5,888 psukim in the Torah. Yes, they're all of Tilim Shmoyne. Tilim has eight more. Chosim mena. Divrayomim Shmoyne. Divrayomim has eight less. Which also gets into some difficulty. First of all, as far as the Pesukim of Torah, it's saying over here 5888. So there's actually a different gear to 8888. But anyway, our present day, if you look at the end of a Chumash, you'll see it says 5845. So we're about 40 some Pesukim short. So again, we would have to assume that they had, in some places, different divisions of Pesukim than we do. The one with Tilim, Tosfos says, is an even more serious problem. Tilim, as we count it nowadays, only has about 2,500 Pesukim. Even if you were to divide Tilim into smaller psukim, it would be hard to get eight more psukim than in Chumash.
As opposed to
we're saying it's eight more psukim than Chumash. There would have to be 5,896. That's a big difference. And Divrei Yomim is only about 1,700 psukim. So what all this means is a lot of discussion back and forth also of what this means exactly. Anyway, we don't really have the time to go into it in great detail, but yeah. Okay. Turn it up on him. Bishinantam, another meaning of the word Bishinantam, means Shiyu, Diritur Mukhodod and Meficha. The word of Torah should be sharp in your mouth. Bishinantam, the Torah Shonan also means sharp. It means Diritur should be sharp in your mouth, in the sense, Shim Yishalachal Adam Dover, if somebody asks you something in Torah, Alpha Gamligim Matomaloi, don't stutter, don't stumble before you answer him. Ela Emerlo Miyad, you should be able to answer him right away. And Tosfos brings, based on a Gemara and Bava Metzia, that if you ask, did you learn such and such, then you should be humble about it and say, I didn't, because you don't want to sound like a Baal Gadol, look how much I learned. But if they're actually asking an actual question, then yes, by all means, you have to be able to give the answer right off the bat. The first case is they're asking him, did you learn such and such a Masechta, without necessarily any practical purpose in mind. The second one is, you learned this Masechta, will you teach it to us? No difference. Ela emr lemiyad, to say it to him right away, shenemar, because it says, emr lechochma achoisi antagremer, say to chochma, the chochma of Torah, you're my sister, meaning, Rashi says, we can learn two things from that. Number one, as clear as it is to everybody that a sister is also to a person, that's how clear the Torah should be to you. Number two, Rashi says the end of the pasuk is Umoydala Bina Tikra. You should call Bina understanding something that you know, meaning that you should know it. You should know it. You should know it off the top of your head.
But it has to be clear.
It has to be clear, and it has to be something known to you. But Omer, and you have another pasuk that says Kosher Emas Alat Beisach. You should tie the words of Torah on your fingers. Kosher Maluach Lebecha. Write them on the board of your heart. Again, meaning they should be written there so you have them available right away. But Omer, and you have another pasuk that says Kechitzim Biad Diver, like arrows in the hands of a mighty warrior. Cain Bnei Anurim. So are the young children. Meaning Bnei over here means Tamidim. Again, like the Shinantam Lohanacham means your Tamidim. Hanurim, that you teach them when they're young. So in other words, you should be not only learning Torah but teaching, and then that way you have young sharp students when they're young, they're able to absorb well. Vayomer, and you have another pasuk that talks about the importance of having sharp arrows available to you. Chitzecha shnunim, the pasuk until them, your arrows are sharp. Amim tachtecha yitlu, the nations will fall under your power. Sharpened, yeah. So we see, in other words, when you have sharp talmidim, then like you're able to overcome the enemies of the Jewish people.
That's what happened with Rabbi Yochanan. So after the children, they were doing.
Mordechai did that with the three children. And another passage that says, "Ashri agevei ashamilei hashvatim ehem." Happy is a person who fills up his quiver with them. A quiver is what you hold arrows in. If we're comparing tamidim, sharp tamidim to arrows, then a person should have a quiver full of them. The passage continues, "Lo yevoishu." You won't be embarrassed. "Ki yedabros ovim bashar," because they'll be able to speak against their enemies in the gate. Speak, that's what we're going to say. That's why the Gemara is going to continue over here. The enemy doesn't mean enemies of the Jewish people. It means enemies in the sense of your opponents in a discussion of Torah. Before we continue with that, by the way, I'll tell you a funny thing Maharsha says on it. The word ashba over here, we translate it in the quiver. The usual meaning, the standard meaning of ashba throughout Shas usually means garbage. Yeah, like a garbage heap. So Maharsha says what it means is, Bacharim, yeshiva students, tend to not be the neatest people, so a person might not want to have them around his house because they make a mess around his house. No. Ashri agev ashamila eshashvasa man. Happy is a person who has his house full of garbage from the Tumbidim who come. The Marsha. Mayas ovim bashar, what kind of enemies are we talking about at the gate where you only need to speak against them rather than actually fight? Amr Abchiba Abba, Afilu Ha'avu B'noi Ha'rava Tamidah Sha'oiskim Ha'Torah B'Shar Echad, even you have a father and son, or a Rebbe and his Talmud, who are occupied in Torah at one gate, meaning in one Beis Medrash, Nachim Ovim Zeh Zeh, they become like enemies to each other, because each one is acting cautious against each other, neither one wants to accept the other one. Even we're talking of a father and a son, where the son has to have derech eretz for his father and not contradict him, as we'll talk about tomorrow. The same thing with Rebbe and his Talmud. Well, when it comes to an actual matter of halacha, yeah, there's no favoritism. You still have to have derech eretz, but still, you know, you can't say I'm going to set aside my opinion out of derech eretz to my father. No, if it's a matter of halacha, you got to, yeah.
So you can make your father look like a...
No, not make him. Well, you still have to do it in a derech eretz way, but you can't say, it's my father, he knows better, therefore I'm going to set aside my opinion. No. The Einam Zazim Misham, however, the Gemara continues, they don't move away from there before they're finished up. Achinachim Oyhavim Zeteh, before they become friends to each other, because since the whole thing is being done, L'Shem Shemayim, and there's nothing personal in it. Shenemer Es Vahev B'Sufa, as the Pasuk says, Vahev in Sufa. And we darshin vahev in the Moshin Ahava. Actually, it's also brought, the Rav Levick brings, that the words es vahev themselves are the same letters as v'ahavta. Marsha says also vahev can mean Moshin v'ahev, whatever. Anyway, al tukri b'sufa el b'sofa. And don't read as if it said b'sufa in a storm, but rather b'sofa at the end. For at the end, there's es vahev, there's love. What were you going to say? No, we're saying that automatically the very fact that they're learning Torah Lashma means that all of this supposed enmity is not, there's nothing personal in it. It's all Lashem Shemayim, and therefore at the end of every very discussion, or every part of the discussion, there's Ava. There has to be.
During the whole discussion, there's Ava, right?
Yes, but we're saying at the end you actually see.
Why
no? I'll go cover Zebazah. I mean, they weren't so careful about the Esvahe for Sofa. Okay, I mean, they have the famous explanation of the debtor that they cared so much for each other that they felt the other one is going on the wrong derech and he has to correct him. Okay, famous thing. Yeah. Turn it up on him. When the pasuk says the samtem at dvara ela, that we can darshan the word the samtem as if it said samtem, a perfect medicine. Why do we need to darshan it? Marsha says, for one thing, because you can't do the samtem at dvara ela. How can you literally put the words of Torah on your heart? It has to be that the word is meant for a drasha. Nimshala Torah kasam chayim. Therefore, we see the Torah is compared to an elixir, to a medicine of life. Marsha points out, by the way, the word tam is the opposite of mess. That's where we get chayim. It's an elixir of life. It's the opposite of, because tam is the opposite of mess. Marshal Adam Shikas Bnei Makav Gola. It's a marshal like a person hit his son with a very hard blow. And then he put a poultice, a medicine on the wound. But Amalai, and he said to him, Bni, Kozman showed a tiazu amakoscha, as long as this poultice, as long as this remedy is on the wound, echo mashana ofcha, you can eat whatever you enjoy, or shte mashana ofcha, you can drink whatever you enjoy, or rechot ben bechamin ben mitzainin, you can bathe in hot or cold water, vein at mesiara, and you have nothing to worry about. The im atma avira, but if you take it off, are malanumi. Then this wound is going to get infected. It's going to develop boils or whatever. Kacha, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Amalahem Yisrael. The same thing. The Ebishter says to the Jewish people, Bonai, Barossi Yetzahara, I created a Yetzahara, which is like a painful wound. Barossi, like Torah Tavlin, but I also created the Torah as a spice against it.
Meaning
against the Yetzahara. Why are we comparing the Torah to a spice, by the way? On the face of it, we're comparing it to a medicine. Among other things, in Kundras and Yonash, Torah Chassidus, the Rebbe explains that the idea of it is the Torah, we know, has many, many different milas. What we're focusing on over here is the Torah even has the ability...
It has only milas.
Yeah, of course, but the point is you can talk about many different milas of Torah, but here we're focusing on the Torah has the ability even to go to penetrate all the way down to the Yetzirah, which, as the Gemara is going to say soon, the Yetzirah is the ultimate evil. Even that, the Torah has the power to overcome. That's in a way, the greatness of Torah. More than just the fact Torah makes you, Torah brings Kedusha into the world, this, that, the other, but the fact that it has the ability to tablet, the fact that it has the ability to, so to speak, sweeten the Yetzirah and make it into a positive force, that's one of the greatest miles. But that's why we're comparing it to Tavlin, like you use Tavlin to flavor something that would otherwise be tasteless. It's the same thing over here. You're able to use the Torah to turn the Yetzirah into something positive and then tasty. We're talking in general learning Torah. I mean, specifically, there's within that Torah Sechsidus and the effect that it has on your midas. I forgot to mention, by the way, before when we mentioned about Shlish v'Mikra, Shlish v'Mikra, Shlish v'Mishnah, Shlish v'Talmud, the Rebbe brings in a sicha, a vort from the Rebbe Maharash on that a deeper idea of it is Mikra represents Ava of the Eivishter. The word Mikra literally means calling out. It's calling out to the Eivishter. Mishnah is l'shanis atzmai, to change yourself. And Gemara is Meloshon Ligmur as a Keli, to finish off, to make yourself into a completed Keli for Elikos. So that's the three stages that a person has to go through. Developing Ava, changing their negative traits and making themselves into a Keli for Elikos. And the Braisa continues, Vim Atam Oskim HaTorah, so if you occupy yourself with Torah, Ein Atam Nimsarim B'Yadah, you will not be given over into the hands of the Yetzirah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Haloyim Teitiv Seif. As the pasuk says, isn't it true if you do good, meaning if you learn the Torah, which is Lakach Torah, a good teaching, Seif, then you'll be raised up over your Yetzirah. True. Actually, Marsha says that the Gemara is quoting the pasuk over here. Really, the first part of the pasuk couldn't really apply to Cain. He didn't have the Torah yet. It's primarily the last part of the pasuk, the Apatim Shabbai, that was meant to apply to him. He obviously fell down on the job, but the Torah is telling us that we can do better with the power of Torah. The main atomizing about Torah continues the Braise. If you don't occupy yourselves with Torah, atonim sodom yoda, you will be handed over to the Yetzirah. Shenema la pasach chatas rebet. So the pasuk continues the chatas, sin, is crouching at the door, waiting for you. Yes. He thought certain mitzvahs didn't apply to him, yeah. Not only that, the Yetzirah, all of his business is going to be with you. His whole agenda is to trip you up. The same pasuk continues, his desire is to you. But if you want Atam Moshebo, you will be able to rule over the Yetzirah. The pasuk says you can rule over him. Why is it repeating it? If we said already you're saved from the Yetzirah, why does it have to say at the end of the pasuk? Different explanations. One of them is rhetorical. So that's one explanation. It actually can start out with that you're saved from him, and then if you learn Torah l'shma, if you want to do for the right reason, because the Eidishter wants, then Atam Moshebo, you can have the ability to dominate it. Also, there's another explanation that's talking about even if you ended up tripping up, you ended up by lachat shukal, say that the Yetzirah wanted to get you and he managed to get you. Nevertheless, you can always do tshuva and come back to atatim shabbai. Tanarabanan. Since we're talking about the Yetzirah, we learn in a brayta, kosher Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is a harsh thing. Shafilu yotzrei kora. Even the Creator, the Eibishter, who himself created the Yetzirah, calls it evil. Tamar Shah says it's like the Eidishter calls it evil, as we're going to call it a positive. The point is, Marsha says, like when you have a person himself made something, and he says, look how bad it is, you know you can take him at his word. Shenema, usually a person will run afraid of what they make. So the person, yeah. Shenema, ki yetzel leva adam ram in order, but the positive says the inclination of a person's heart is evil from his youth. So we see the Eidishter himself calls it evil. A person's Yetzirah renews itself against him every day. As it says, only evil all day. All day, meaning that all throughout all hours of the day, it keeps on becoming new. A person's Yetzirah tries to overpower him every day. And he wants to kill him. The Gemara tells us in Baba Basra, Satan Yetzirah and Malach HaMavis are all the same force. So the Yetzirah tries to trip a person up, and then it changes disguises into the Malach HaMavis and prosecutes him, and then. Of course, you don't need a prosecutor. I mean, the Gemara is telling us it's created by Hashem. But we're still saying, nevertheless, the Eibishter himself is calling it evil to show you how bad it is.
I'm saying created by Hashem, but
granted, nevertheless, though, we're saying that still, you know, from our perspective and from the Eibishter, the Gemara tells us in Sukkah that actually the Eibishter Kaviyachol regrets that he created a Yetzirah in the first place. The Gemara says that there's three or four, I think it's four things that the Eibishter created, which Kaviyachol he regrets that he created them. One of them is the Yetzirah.
He regrets that he created it?
Yes. True, because Tov Ma'or is the Yetzirah, there is that, yeah, because the fact that the Yetzirah makes our avodah meaningful, but nevertheless, wouldn't it be much better? Yeah, it makes, but on the other hand, wouldn't it be better if we were able to have the kind of bechira like there was before the Chet Eitz Hadas, and like we'll have any Moshe Mashiach, where you don't need a Yetzirah to struggle against? It says the Tov Ma'or short of Meir. No, that was Tov Ma'or down Malvis. I think it's in Bereshit Rabbah, I think it says Tov Ma'or down Malvis. Based on the pasuk, but he knows Tov Ma'or. Okay. Anyway. So, okay. The if it weren't for the fact that the Eibishter helps a person, and Yochalo, he would not be able to overcome the Yetzirah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, I skipped the line. Yeah. Shinema, the pasuk says, Tzofer Rosh al Tzadik Muvakash Lam. You see, the Tzadik looks out, the Rosh looks out for the Tzadik and wants to kill him. The Umalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozrei, if it weren't for the fact that Eibishter helps the person, and Yochalo, he wouldn't be able to overcome him. Shinema, Elokim LaYazven HaBiyodeh. As the next pasuk continues, the Eibishter won't abandon him in his hands. That's whatever brings in Perek Yud Gimel of Tanya, the deeper idea behind this, that the person has a benin, he has a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara. Every day, as the Gemara is saying over here, the Yetzer Hara keeps on trying to, the Nefesh of Amos keeps on trying to assert itself. What makes it possible for the Nefesh of the Kis to overcome it, and then that the person doesn't actually do Avedas, is the Koyach that the Eidishna gives it, the Yetzer and Oyem and Achoshech, the fact that Tov has more power than Ra. I saw, by the way, when we say over here, Yitzchak Shalom Mischad Shalom B'Cholim, that it renews itself every day. What's the importance of that it renews itself? A lot of different explanations. Well, I saw actually a vote from Rabbi Yonasan Haibashitz. He says normally you keep on doing the same thing over and over. After a while, you get sick and tired of it. The Yitzchak has the ability to make a person keep on thinking that this is the good thing to do, even though B'Dedah HaTevah you'd be tired of it. Mischad Shalom every day, he renews himself. Yeah. He makes it think like it's a whole new experience. Yeah. B'ni, he says, my son, in Pogav Chamanuvel there, if this disgusting creature, the Yetzirah, meets up with you, M'shcheu l'Beis HaMedrash, drag him to the Beis HaMedrash. Im Evenhu, if this Yetzirah is like a stone, Nimayach, he'll melt away from the power of Torah. And then in the Beis HaMedrash. Im Barzelhu, and if he's like iron, M'spoitzeh, he will explode. Yeah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Haloi koi dvorei ka'esh nu'um Hashem, aren't my words like fire, says Hashem, uchafatish yifoytet selah, and like a hammer that shatters a rock. The Tosfos points out the mashal and the nimshal don't do the same thing, and the mashal we're comparing the Yetzirah to iron that explodes. That explodes into sparks, and in the nimshal, you're saying that you're in the nimshal. You're saying that the hammer shatters the rock. This just gives a couple of different possibilities. One of them is that Fakemet, we're talking about such a hard rock that if you strike it with a hammer, the hammer shatters. Chopatish yipoytet selah means, in other words, the other way around. It means like a hammer that has exploded into fragments by the rock. I'll tell you actually what Ben Yoyada says on it. He says what the meaning of it is. Let's say, for example, you have a Yetzihara to fight with people. You know what? Don't ignore it altogether. Bring it to the Beis Medrash. Use that desire to fight. Use it for the fight of Torah, like we said before. Eventually you'll melt away the negativity of it and have less the good aspect of it. So that's as far as the iron. Im even hunimoyach, and if it's a stone, it'll melt away. Shenema hoikot samil l'chulamayim, as it says, everybody who's thirsty comes to the water of Torah. But Omer, another passage says, upon him shachakumayim, water wears away stones, like in the story of Rabbi Akiva. Going back to the Braisa that we quoted right after the Mishnah had mentioned all the different chiyuvim that a father has to do for his son. We talked about learning Torah, that brought us into this whole discussion. Then he had to teach him Torah. The next one was lafia yisha, he has to marry him off to a wife. Menolon, where do we know that a father has such a chiyuv for his son? Just this, they have a pasuk in Yumia. He says to the people who have been taken to Golas Babel, chunoshim, take wives for yourself, ve'lidu bonim avonos, and bear sons and daughters, uchuluv nechem noshim, take wives for your sons, v'espenesechem tenulah noshim, and give your daughters away in marriage to men. Settle in over there, and he's telling him it's going to be a long dollars. So we see from that, he's saying uchuluv nechem noshim means that a father is obligated to make sure that his son gets married. I can understand. Your son, you have it in your power. You're the one who's able to make a shidduch for your son. A daughter, how is it the other? You can't get somebody else to marry her. What do you mean when they say from Tnula Noshim? The answer is Hachakama. What it means Hachakama, what Yumi is telling them, Nitin Lamid, your father should give his daughter something, give her some money. The Lavashia Vidhasia, give her what to wear, give her what to cover herself with, so she should look attractive. That way people will jump to want to marry her. So it's true, you don't have it in your power, it's usually the chassan's family that arranges the actual shidduch, but you can at least, as the kala's father, you can make it that she'll be attractive, that people will want to marry her in the first place.
That's what happened for Yitzchak, the time the Avram Sunday in Eliezer.
Yeah, indeed. That Abraham made the shidduch for Yitzchak, and also he gave him money and everything so that Laban's family would agree to the shidduch.
So
Right, okay. Well, Lamde Umnus, we said that a father is obligated to teach his son a craft. Menolon, where do we know that from? Omachizkiya to Omachrok, as the Pasuk says, Re'ei Chaim im Isha Asher Havta. See that you should have a life with the woman who you love. Now, what does that mean? If the word Isha can have two different meanings. It can mean an actual wife or it can mean the Torah. So therefore, we can understand the Pasuk either way. Im Isha Mamashi, if it means an actual wife, it means Kashem Shechai is making a hekesh. Kashem Shechai Lasi Isha. Just as a father is obligated to marry off his son, as we just said, Kachai V'lam De'umnus, so he's obligated to teach him a craft that he can live off of. Re'echai means give him something to live with, the son. Make sure that he has what to live off of. In Torah, and if Isha over here means the Torah, then Kashem Shechai Belamdit, so it means, in other words, that Umnus should be combined with Torah, then it would mean Kashem Shechai Belamdit Torah, just that he's obligated to teach him Torah, Kachai Belamdit Umnus, so he's obligated to teach him a craft. Actually, it's an interesting thing. The Meiri says that brings an explanation that what the Braisa means, it's one or the other. Either you have to teach him Torah, or you have to teach him a craft. If you teach him Torah, the Meiri says, that itself is good enough. Learning Torah itself is a valid occupation.
He says
that it means one or the other. Lamde Torah or Lamde Umnus is the case. Then he brings a second explanation that means you have to have both. You have to have Torah as well as you have to have Umnus. We're going to have at the end of the Masechta, and then the last, and at the end of the Masechta, the last mishnah of the Masechta, we're going to have a couple of different opinions of Tanoim on this subject of whether a person should teach his children a craft or whether he should teach them, or whether he should teach them Torah, just Torah.
If he has to teach him umrus, isn't there some sort of steer to what we said before that you can learn until, you know, there's no end to it, basically?
Fine, but
to work.
So that, no, so that's what we said yesterday, for example, but the reason why, even though in Pirkei Avos it says that you have to get married at 18, and then you're only at 20, you have to start Parnos, then Eshim Lubav. So that's what Eber said, because for the first couple of years after a person's married, he doesn't have much of a family yet, he can still spend that time learning. After that, for most people, it's time to go to work. Okay. The Yesh Oimim Afal Shita B'Nar, then we had a Yesh Oimim in the Braisa that said that a father was also obligated to teach his son to swim. My time, because it's essential for his life. Like we said yesterday, if he's on a ship and it sinks. That too, yeah. That was the verse from the Tosafot. And we said, I didn't check, actually. No, I'm going by it. If Yossi Jacobson said it's in the Tosafot, I think you can take that to the bank, yeah. Then we said in the Braisa, the last thing we said was that Rabbi Yehuda said anybody who doesn't teach his son a craft is teaching him thievery, and we said listus akhlet, we mean literally thievery. Ela ki'ilu malamde listus, as if he's teaching him thievery. The maibinai, what's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama? Both of them seem to be saying the same thing. The Tanakhama is saying you have to teach him umnus. Rabbi Yehuda is saying if you don't, it's as if you're teaching him thievery. What is Rabbi Yehuda adding? The answer is ikubinai of the agmarei iska. The difference between them would be, what if he didn't teach him a craft, but he taught him business? According to the Tanakhama, good enough, you taught him a method of panosa. Business is a valid method of parnasa. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the problem is, what if you don't have what to do business with? Nobody's buying and selling now. He's going to be reduced to thievery. Whereas if he has a craft, then at least there's always what you can be making in order to sell. Tosfos Riyazanokin has a different explanation of it. The problem with an iska is you can gain, but you can also lose. You can lose your investment, and then he's
also you can gain.
Umnus, you always have the raw materials. You always have the crafts that you're able to make. As long as you can get the raw materials, you're good. An iska, though, you can invest your money and you can invest your money in merchandise. And then what happens? You know, there's a fire. You don't have insurance and whatever, and everything's gone.
What's the difference between umnus and then iska?
Umnus is you're actually making something. You're actually making something that people can use.
Manufacturing.
Yes. Isco would be, for example, the stock market. You're not actually creating anything, but you're wheeling and dealing. You're providing the financing that makes the economy go. But what happens? You know, what happens if there's a Wall Street crash? You know, then yeah. I saw, by the way, another explanation. Also, the difference between umnus and iska is in iska, there's much more of a possibility that there is going to be listus involved. You're going to end up overcharging, undercharging, doing finagling, you know, with all kinds of other financial shenanigans, as we hear about in the news all the time. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, better you should be doing umnus where there's less chance of any of that kind of thing.